On this week's episode, I talk about and play my brand new Fender Telecaster. I talk about new music from Mandolin Orange, The Flesh Eaters, and Bob Mould. And then I talk about video games on the PS4, including Fallout 4, Red Dead Redemption 2, and WWE 2K19. All that, plus whatever else comes out. If you enjoy the show, you can check out the companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're available on iTunes and CastBox, but not Spotify. I'll never sell my soul to Spotify. If you like me and want to know more about me, you can go to derekbrink.com. And if you like the music that you hear throughout the show, you can check out derekbrink.bandcamp.com, where it's all available for absolutely free. I don't even collect your email address. As always, I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Hey there, checkmates. Good to be back with you. Sorry this episode's going to be going up a little later than usual, but things kind of got away from me. I've had some busy times here lately. It seems like that's a recurring thing when I start talking on the podcast. I've had some busy stuff. I've had some busy times. I've been busy. So I'm going to be putting this one up, I think, sometime Sunday afternoon or early evening, and I'll probably actually even be finishing up my work on it sometime Sunday or thereabout. So sorry that it's like this used to be. This used to go up midnight every Thursday, and that just slowly pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. I have a life outside of this. Sorry. I know that's hard to believe based on the fact that I do this alone and just talk about pop culture stuff that I bought that only I enjoy. But yes, I do have a life outside of this, and I apologize that it keeps getting pushed back and whatnot. I feel like I should update you on something in said life. I'm saying this here rather than having, like, you know, personal conversations with people in my life, is that this is the first place that I really talked about it at all outside of certain circumstances. Let me get you into this. Let me bring you into what I'm talking about. My if you remember the episode I did of this show where I talked to my friend Jim Ousley, that's in the archives. There was an interchange we had where I talked about having seen a counselor and talked through some issues, and that was very beneficial to me and continues to be very beneficial to me. And one of the things that came up in that is we talked a lot about the drinking and stuff that I had been doing. And this particular counselor has a background in addiction studies and that kind of thing. And just talking about that stuff. One of the things that I've been careful to do since I quit drinking is I have not referred to myself as an alcoholic, except for in some situations where it's just been easier than explaining, nah, I don't drink because I don't, you know, whatever. But I've not referred to myself as that because I've never been an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. When I quit very abruptly. I didn't go through any withdrawals. It was basically an easy decision to quit. I just stopped cold turkey and had no real negative repercussions from it other than, boy, I wish I had a drink right now, you know, every now and again. But basically, it was an easy, quick decision. I have done my best not to refer to myself as an alcoholic. I didn't seek any treatment for that, etc., etc. All this came up in the discussion with the counselor. And if you'll remember that episode with Jim, I said that one of the things the counselor said to me was, hey, I don't think we need to talk about your drinking. I think we need to talk about your depression. And that basically, over a series of conversations, basically, yeah, I don't really have a drinking problem. I just need to avoid it when I'm down is the ultimate conclusion there. So here's the thing. I want to have a Guinness with my dad on St. Patrick's Day. And I want to have a Guinness occasionally when I want to have a Guinness. Because I'll tell you this, over the past 5 years, I've missed Guinness. And you know, little things here and there, like when I make a pot of chili, it's nice to have a like a kind of sharp ale or something to cut through it while I'm cooking. That was always a fun thing that I did. I don't plan on getting drunk anytime soon. It's never been fun to get drunk. I've never seen the fun of getting drunk. Getting drunk is always a fairly miserable experience, and you end up doing things that you regret that you would have done anyway if you were sober. It just would have taken more time to talk you into it. But I do want to have a beer now and again. One. A beer. Like, if I'm at a rock show and I want to have a, I don't know, what I used to drink, like a Sam Adams or a Killian's or something while I'm watching a cool rock band. I think I should be able to have one, and I think I've developed the discipline to have none over the past 5 years, so I think I can have one. And on St. Patrick's Day, I want to have a Guinness with my dad to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, because we always do stuff together on St. Patrick's Day. It'd be nice to have a Guinness with my dad. So I'm going to do that, and I've made the life decision that I'm going to do that. And I'm also going to, if I want a beer every now and again, I'm going to have a beer. Because I talked to a counselor who told me I don't have a problem. Basically, that's it, not in so many words, but the underlying thing is, look, folks, I'm not going to go out and go drinking every Saturday night or whatever with everybody. There's a sadness to that that I don't want to get wrapped up in. But and I'm sorry, but there is. If you need to drink to have a good time, there's something very sad about that. And that's speaking from 5 years of sobriety where I've had a good time without drinking. There's something very sad about needing alcohol to have a good time at something. But I want to have a beer just for fun, just for the enjoyment of it. A beer, not get drunk, you know? So that's... I'm going to do that occasionally, when I want to. You may come to my house and there may be Guinness in the fridge. I particularly miss Guinness, in case you haven't picked up on that. but I don't want anybody to worry about that. And I don't feel like this is as big a deal as it probably sounds like it is. But I know that it's going to feel like a big deal to some people in my life, so I wanted to say something about it. I'm not going to talk about it a lot. But I am going to have a Guinness when I want a Guinness, and I definitely want to have a Guinness on St. Patrick's Day with my dad. I also want to have a Guinness at the Flogging Molly concert that I'm going to on March 10th. So that's it just seems like you almost have to. I'm amazed that I didn't have one when I went to the Flogging Molly Dropkick Murphys show. It seemed like the one thing that was missing from the evening. Although in the kind of heat that we were in, I don't think Guinness would have been a good thing to drink. Yeah, I want to have a couple of Guinness to embrace my Irishness and what have you, and that's the end of it. So, I'm just putting that out there. I'm just going to say that and put it out there. That's, where I am in my life choices and life decisions, and they're my decisions and mine alone. If anyone's concerned, you can talk to me about them, but I guarantee you, you have nothing to be concerned about. I'm in a good place. I have some tools to keep me in a good place, and when I'm in a bad place, I can avoid picking up a bottle. That's not hard to do. It's not hard to not buy something. It's not hard to not pick something up. It's not hard to not drink something. It's much harder to talk yourself into getting drunk, I think. It's much harder to continue making yourself feel terrible, I think, because nobody gets drunk and feels great. You know, the hangovers are real. I'm almost 40. I probably can't keep up that kind of pace. If I don't get enough sleep at night, I'm exhausted and feel terrible. I don't want to add having been drunk the night before to that, you know? So it's much harder at this point in my life for me to talk myself into, you know what, I'm going to get plastered and forget the whole evening. That's a sad mindset to be in, and people who are in it don't even realize that it's sad. I get that, but it's a sad mindset to be in, and I don't want to go there. But I do want to occasionally have a drink with something else that I'm doing that's also fun, and that's it. That's it, and that's all, and I just wanted to get that out there. And again, if you want to talk to me about this, please talk to me about this, and I can guarantee that I will reassure you that everything's fine. But yeah, I started that conversation on this show, I guess, so I'm continuing it on this show, and that's where we are. Let's move on and talk about stuff that I bought. I know that this is a weird transition, but we're going to move away from that and talk about other things. Talk about happier things, less serious things, things that I'm not going to have to explain to people. For the most part, anyway. There are some purchasing choices I make that are very hard to explain to anybody, but one choice that I made this past week, or week before, I guess, that I believe should merit no explanation, that is probably explains itself, is that I went out and I bought myself a Fender Telecaster, a nice blonde Fender Telecaster. It's an American-made, which is a big deal for those of us who collect guitars and who play guitars. Fender makes a couple of different lines, and the American ones are the ones that are sort of the best built. They're handmade, they're hand-wired. There's no machinery involved in doing that other than what you would use with your hands. They also have a Mexican line that's fine. I've got actually a Mexican Telecaster that's been heavily modded that I've talked about on the show before. You can find that somewhere in the archives. But the American ones are just nicer. They're better parts. They're handmade. They're, you know, checked out. They come with certificates of authenticity and things like that. It's a big deal to buy a Fender, American Fender guitar. And I've been a Telecaster fan for a very long time. The Telecaster has a long legacy of just use in rock and roll. Keith Richards, Townsend has used them. Bruce Springsteen, very famously associated with the Telecaster. I'm pretty sure I've seen him on Tom Petty. Jimmy Page used one in the Yardbirds. I know that I've seen him on Neil Young before. Frank Black from the Pixies, or Black Francis, whatever he wants to call himself these days. Name a band, they've probably used a Telecaster at some point on something that you really, really love. The Telecaster is kind of the workhorse of rock and roll and country. Waylon Jennings, almost synonymous with the Telecaster. The guitar you always think of Waylon Jennings holding, that's a Telecaster. So I like the Telecaster, and I've had a Telecaster that was kind of a gift from a friend when I completed some recording from him, or for him, pardon me. And I like that guitar, but it's heavily modified, and it's not like a true Tele. It's a Tele with a bunch of other stuff thrown onto it. So I wanted a good Telecaster, and I ran into some extra money, some fun money. Because, I'm going to tell you where that came from. My dad is a well-invested individual. He's by no means rich, but he's comfortable. And he, in some of his investments, he has to take out some money yearly. And when he does that, he's a very generous guy. And through a series of personal decisions, including watching his mother's life savings get eaten up down to zero when she was in a nursing home, he realized that he wants to give his kids some money now and again just to know that they had fun with something in case something similar happens to him. So when he takes out that yearly thing from the thing that he has to take it out from, I don't understand all of it, he'll write my brother and I both a check for a nice sum of money, and we'll both go and spend it on on garbage, usually. My brother, I think, actually put his in the bank and was responsible. I bought a guitar. So I went to the Guitar Center one day after work, knowing that I had that kind of extra cushion of money, and just started looking around, because I'd had a bad day at work, and there are two kinds of bad days at my work. Well, there are a few different kinds of bad days at my work, but there are two that really kind of settle in. There's the bad day where I want to go to a record store after work and buy music to make myself feel better. And then there are the days that I want to go to a guitar store after work and write the music myself. And I was having one of those days. No comment on the work, but that just, everybody has those days. And I was having one of those days. So I went to Guitar Center after that day had ended. And I knew I was going to look at Telecasters, and I had a couple in mind, and I had a look in mind. I wanted a blonde Tele. I think they're cool. And they had a few hanging on the wall, and I played a few hanging on the wall, and there was one hanging higher up on the wall that was a little nicer and a little more expensive. And I asked the kid behind the counter, and by kid, I mean grown adult who was 23, but kid, behind the counter, hey, can I play that one? And he said, yeah, sure, no one's even played it yet. It's been, you know, just up there, and it's brand new. You're the first guy to ask for it, so that's kind of cool. So he hands it to me. And I'm playing it for probably a good half hour. And there are these other kids who, again, probably in their 20s, wandering around playing Ibanez guitars and some of the low-end Gretsch stuff and the stuff that you play when you're that age that I actually really still enjoy and have in my collection and enjoy playing that stuff too. And I would, like right now, if I had to buy a new bass, I would go out and the first basses I would look at would be Ibanez, because I'm in no way crapping on the brand. Ibanezes are built like tanks. But I, you know, when you get a little bit older and you're willing to spend more on a guitar, you look at some of the Fenders and some of the you know, some of the ones that are hung up high, and the you have to ask the kid at the guitar center to get a step stool and take it down for you. So that's what happened. And there were these other kids in there, and they were kind of, you know, wandering over and talking to me about, like, you gonna buy that, man? That's a cool guitar, you know, and that kind of stuff. And just sort of talking, and the way you do in a guitar store, I'm the older guy sharing the pearls of my wisdom, which are few, if any. But it was a fun experience, that whole thing. And like one of those kids ended up buying a guitar strap, and I thought that was adorable, you know. And but yeah, so I'm sitting there playing an unplayed Fender Tele that has just kind of got my name on it, you know. And I realize as soon as he hands it to me, wow, this immediately feels really comfortable. And guitar players know you buy the one that you bond with. And as soon as it was in my hands, I was like, yep, this is the one. But I still played it for about a half hour. And I finally walked up to him and I said, hey, I like this guitar. And I came here kind of knowing I was going to buy a Telecaster. And I had a number in mind. And this is the number that I had in mind. But this guitar is priced a little bit higher than the number I had in mind. Is there anything you can do for me? And they said, yeah, sure, let's do some math here. And they worked on it. And I'm not going to tell any numbers because I don't want to guarantee that they'll do the same thing for you if you go to a guitar center. But they gave me a very good deal on it, and came with a case, and it's the kind of guitar I wanted, and it's fairly lightweight for what it is. It's got a beautiful sort of pale neck compared to what you normally see on a Fender guitar. The neck's a little bit lighter, and I thought that was really cool looking. And yeah, you can see photos of it on the blog over at emptychecking.blogspot.com. That's there, so you can you can check that out. And it's a good looking guitar, and it's a good playing guitar. And I could talk about it all day, but that will be boring to a lot of you. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be playing the guitar between segments on the show here today. That's why you didn't get a segment between me talking about my personal life and the Telecaster, because I wanted to explain that the music you'll be hearing between segments is going to be me just playing the Telecaster. Normally I'd just drop in one of my songs from my catalog of music and etc., but yeah, I'm going to play a little guitar in between segments here today, and all I'm doing is I'm running the guitar, the Telecaster, direct into a pig nose amplifier, which is a tiny little amp. I don't know if everybody knows what the pig nose is. It's a tiny amp that has no real settings on it. It's just sort of volume only. One of the things about a nice guitar, I'm a big fan of playing nice guitars through crappy amps, because if you can get a crappy amp to sound good, you know you've got a nice guitar. So I'm setting out to prove that theory here in between segments on the show today. So you'll be hearing my brand new Fender Telecaster American Pro Series, played through a crappy pig nose amp that I got for like $30. That's what you're hearing between segments today, and I hope you enjoy it, because I'm going to enjoy playing that. So that's where we are. And I don't know exactly what I'll be playing, but I imagine it's all going to be something that's copyrighted by me. So there. We'll be right back. Well, folks, I've got some new music to talk about. There's a lot of stuff coming out here at the start of the year, and that rhymed, and you know it rhymed. And I'm looking forward to a lot of stuff that's coming out this year. It's going to be a good one. Got a few things already. I've actually got a pile of stuff, because I'm recording this later than I should. I've got a pile of stuff that I haven't listened to, but I'm going to talk about the stuff that I have. I think I've mentioned on the show before, and if I haven't, then hey, here you go. I've become a part of the Yep Rock Completist Club, which Yep Rock is a record label, and the Completist Club is basically, if you join it, they send you a copy of everything they do that year. So I'm in that, and it's so far been worth it, I think. The first Completist package came through and was packed with stuff I liked. It had a couple things I liked and something I came really close to liking. Came with a couple of things from the band Mandolin Orange, who I've just recently gotten into. It came with a single and also with their brand new album, which is called Tides of a Teardrop. And the single has been out for a little while. You've probably seen it in stores. The main attraction of that is the song Golden Embers, which is the first track on Tides of a Teardrop, which I just said the name of that album, and I forgot it right there, too. So that's how my brain is working today. Golden Embers. I liked that song first time I heard it, and I really enjoyed listening to this album. It's a really cool release, and I got it on vinyl, so it comes in, it came in a couple of shades of blue on the actual album itself. I'll try to put pictures of that on the blog. You could probably hear me rustling with the vinyl sleeve here in the background, sorry about that. It's a really good release. Mandolin Orange is a folky, not quite bluegrassy, but Americana-type feel of a band that, you can imagine from the name, they heavily feature a mandolin here and there. And beautiful stuff. I can't remember if I've talked about them in the past on the podcast or not, but the way I've been describing them is they write the kind of music that it would be really great to listen to drunk on a hot summer night sitting on a porch. That's the kind of music they write. And beautiful country Americana stuff. The new album, Tides of a Teardrop, is fantastic. Golden Embers is a great song. That's the title track. I like Into the Sun quite a bit. Lonely All the Time is a great song. Late September is a great song. It's just a nice sitting around, not doing much or sitting around thinking type album. Beautiful stuff. Really warm folk music that sounds great on vinyl. It also probably sounds great on CD. I know it sounds great on the vinyl rip that I did to my car, because it comes with a download card. By the way, record companies, please always include download cards if you're doing a new release, because people need that. Because I love sitting around listening to vinyl, but I want to listen to it in my car too, and it's a lot easier to do the download card than to do it myself through the whole plugging in wires and ripping a copy off of the vinyl thing. Just give me a download card, folks. Work with me. Mandolin Orange, thankfully, and most Yep Rock recordings, from what I could tell, they provide download cards. And that's been wonderful. Tides of a Teardrop is one I'm going to return to a lot this year. It's going to be a good sort of lazy drive-in record and a good sitting around, it's gotten too late, but I'm still up type of record. And I highly recommend it to anybody who maybe that sounds like your cup of tea. Also in the Yep Rock Completist package for this past month was the new album by The Flesh Eaters called I Used to Be Pretty. Flesh Eaters have been around in various forms since like the 80s. Current lineup on this record, I'm going to read it across the back here, is John Doe on the bass, Dave Alvin on guitar, Chris D on lead vocals, who I believe it's basically Chris D's project, Bill Bateman on drums, Steve Berlin on sax, and DJ Bonebreak, that's hard to say, DJ Bonebreak on marimba and percussion, and various other guest musicians here and there, I think. But I'm a big Dave Alvin fan. Dave Alvin, formerly of the Blasters and an extensive solo career. If you're gonna look for any Dave Alvin, download his solo copy of Little Honey on the King of California album. It's beautiful. He also does a great version of Blue Wing. But Flesh Eaters put out this this thing, I Used to Be Pretty. It's the first thing we've heard from the Flesh Eaters in a very long time. I kind of hate the way I'm going to review this, and I'm sorry that I'm going to review it in the way that I'm going to. It's an album that I would like a lot better with a different singer. That's ultimately my review of the album. It's got some country overtones, some punk overtones. I think the singer thinks it's more of a punk band than it is. And that's a problem for me. I guess I should say Chris D. I think Chris D thinks it's more of a punk band than it is. And I think it maybe used to be more of a punk band than it is. But it's... I like Dave Alvin, and I was expecting to hear a little bit more of the Dave Alvin influence on it, and I just plain didn't. And the vocals just leave something to be desired. And I hate to review something that way, because I know that vocal stylings are a kind of a... you can't do a lot about what your voice sounds like, and you can't do a lot about what your voice is, and it's a very subjective thing whether you like a singer or not. And there's just something about Mr. D that it's, by the way, it's just C-H-R-I-S space the letter D period. That's how he builds himself. So there's something about Mr. D that just doesn't resonate with me, and feels like there are times where it feels like he's just sort of walking through it, which is probably just his style, but the times where he actually gets a little bit of passion and a little bit of anger in his voice, it actually works for me really well, but those are few and far between on the album. So, with a different vocal track on each song, I would really like this album, but otherwise it just barely falls short for me on the Flesh Eaters, I'm sad to say, because I was looking forward to that one, and I was hoping it'd be something I'd really enjoy, but it just fell short, which is a shame, because I like a lot of the guys involved with it. John Doe and Dave Alvin, both great musicians and cool, you know, stuff in their back catalog, but I don't know. It just sort of fell short for me, and I hate to say that, because I really want to like it better, and I feel like there is an album in there that I should like a lot better, and I know that a lot of people like it a lot better than I do, but I'm just not quite on board, and that sucks, because I really want to love it. But Flesh Eaters, I Used to Be Pretty. If you like stuff that thinks it's more punk than it is, maybe it's what you want it to be. The other thing I have to review is something that's exactly as punk as it thinks it is, and that's the new album by Bob Mould, previously of Husker Du fame, but he's been Bob Mould for a couple of decades now. Bob Mould's new album is called Sunshine Rock. I picked it up on CD recently, and I've been a fan of Bob Mould's for a while. I've been following his career for a while. Every time he puts out something new, I buy it and I listen to it, and I basically have a good time. And that's exactly the case here, too. I popped it in and had a good time. I'll tell you this, there's not a ton of really memorable songs in it, because it's all very much the same tone, with the exception of the song Camp Sunshine, which is more of a ballady feel that breaks up the album, but frankly probably could have been used in the first half rather than the second half. But Camp Sunshine stands out. The title track and opening track, Sunshine Rock, stands out. But basically it's a good album. Basically it's got the energy and the fun and the grit that I like in a Bob Mould release. It suffers from the same thing his last few releases suffer from, and I need to just accept that it's just how he likes to mix things, but the vocal is a little bit too quiet, it's a little bit buried in the mix, and I'm sure that that's intentional. I'm sure that's how Bob and whoever's producing Bob on this one, I can probably find that out, that's probably on the back here. No, it is not, and I'm not going to open up the thing. I'm sure that Bob just prefers to have his vocal mixed a little bit lower in with the music rather than on top of it. I just personally prefer to have a vocal on top of the music so you can clearly distinguish the words. I'm going to have to break out the lyric sheet on this later, and I'm a busy guy. I don't have a lot of time to sit around and read everybody's lyric sheets. I'd rather just be able to understand it. And Bob's vocals are a little bit under where they need to be, in my opinion. But ultimately, that doesn't stop the songs from feeling fun and feeling energetic. So that's again, sort of a subjective thing. It's a vocal choice. That said, though, I really like it. It's a good, strong Bob Mould release. It's a good, strong rock release. So I recommend Bob Mould's Sunshine Rock, and I think it belongs in your collection if you like that kind of music. Otherwise, musically, I've got a lot of stuff that I've picked up that I haven't listened to that I'm sure I'll talk about on an upcoming show. Maybe I'll talk about one of them in particular next week, in 2 weeks, because I think I'm doing another theme show, and I think I know what it's going to be. Haven't decided yet, though, so you'll have to wait with anticipation. Only other music thing going on that I know is Flogging Molly's coming to town. I mentioned that, I think, in the intro, and I'm looking forward to that. It'll be my first Flogging Molly full headlining set, and they're coming in with Lucero and somebody else. And Lucero I'm not a huge fan of, because I've seen him, and I wasn't impressed by the fact that the lead vocalist, just his whole gimmick is he gets drunk and plays whatever people yells for, and that's cute for a while, but he's at an age where it's kind of, yeah, all right, it's got to be really sad when you die from that, man. Just knock it off, you know? And I don't know. I got to the point where I didn't really respect that watching the show, because it was sloppy and the guy was just very, very drunk by the time. He's one of those guys who you just hand him stuff on the stage. Anything someone hands him, he just drinks and he gets sloppy drunk by the end of every performance. And frankly, the performance suffers, but probably he and the rest of the crowd, who is also just as drunk as he is, thinks that it adds something to it, but it really doesn't. But maybe in a opening act set, he won't have the time to get drunk, and I'll enjoy it more. I don't know, but because there are some Lucero songs that I really like, but I don't have a lot of respect for the way the band does their shows. So that's just how I feel at this point in my life. Maybe they'll change my mind when I see him with Flogging Molly. But I'm looking forward to the Flogging Molly show, and I'm looking forward to telling you all about that after it happens, and I'm sure I'll review more stuff next time we're together. So that's it for music this time, I think. Mandolin Orange, great album. Flesh Eaters, there's something there, but I can't get past the vocals. Bob Mould, great album. Vocals could be a little bit louder. That's your summary of the music section for this week. Last thing I want to talk about here on this particular episode is some stuff I've been playing on the PS4. I've talked about the fact that I'm playing Fallout 4 before. I finally completed it, and it ended in roughly the way I thought it would, and there was a big explosion, and he started talking about how war never changes again, just like he had talked about in the start of the game, and it was kind of, ow, ow, my head, I'm being hit with the symbolism. You know, but ultimately a really fun game that I kind of wish I was still playing, to be honest with you. So that's they achieved their goal, I guess, because I wish I were still playing the game, so that's a good game. And I could still play the game. There's still plenty of stuff to do and explore and whatnot. I haven't done like 100% of it or whatever, but because it's slightly open world. But Fallout 4 was a completely fulfilling experience. I'm really glad I played it. I'm also now playing Red Dead Redemption 2, which, wow, looks just as beautiful as you've been hearing. I know that that's probably no surprise to most people because the game's been out for a little while, but hey, I'm relatively new to this. So I finally started playing the thing, and it looks beautiful, and the snow in it is beautiful. I really hope I run into some more snow throughout the game because they really did that well. And it's the first game I've ever played where the cutscenes in it, although I feel there are slightly too many of them, the cutscenes in it don't feel different from the gameplay. Like, early in the game, I was playing and I was kind of, you know, moving along or whatever. Actually, no, hang on, I've got that backwards. Sorry. Early in the game, I was watching just the opening cutscenes and stuff, and they're, you know, getting you up to where you can play. They're introducing the plot and whatnot. And it switched to gameplay, so seamlessly that I didn't realize I was supposed to be doing anything yet. I just suddenly was stopped and lagging behind the rest of the group, and I realized, oh god, I'm supposed to be controlling this. Like, there was absolutely no transition between the cutscene and the gameplay. It was beautifully done. I've never had that happen to me before, where I haven't realized I should be playing because a cutscene ended. It was that smooth, and that was really cool. But the main thing about it is, man, it just looks beautiful. It just looks freaking beautiful. I'll tell you this, the folks who did Fallout do open world a little bit better than the folks who did Red Dead, which I know seems impossible because the people who do Red Dead also did Grand Theft Auto. I cannot talk today. They also did Grand Theft Auto, GTA, if you will, and kind of pioneered the whole open world thing. But frankly, I feel like Fallout does it better because you can... It feels a little less less clunky, I guess. And the controls are a lot more intuitive in the Fallout franchise than they are in this particular Red Dead game. I keep having to Google how to do stuff in Red Dead, whereas in Fallout, even if I forgot, I could hit pause and find a quick guide to how to control stuff. Red Dead, I have not been able to find that guide. It may exist, but I don't know. Their menus are also a nightmare to navigate. I don't know what anything's supposed to be. And this is, you know, me, old guy, trying to play a game designed for teenagers, but whatever. I found the Fallout controls pretty intuitive. The Red Dead controls are not as intuitive, and boy, it's hard to see the little dot that you have to use to shoot people. I wish I could make that a lot bigger, because in Fallout I could. In Red Dead, it's just a tiny little dot that you... I got bad eyes, folks, and that's that's a problem. But for all of the struggles of the game, for the fact that the controls feel a little unintuitive, for the fact that the red dot is impossible to see if you're a guy like me who is going blind... not literally, but maybe, for all of the struggles of the game, for the fact that I feel like the open world isn't as open as it could be, and you need guidance to things. That's actually my big frustration with Red Dead. I often feel like I don't know what I should be doing. And I wandered into a cutscene that was going to move the story along and, take up probably a half hour to an hour of my time that I didn't mean to wander into. I was just exploring, and I had no chance to back out of it, and suddenly I gave up, and I just exited the game because I didn't have that kind of time. I was actually just gonna kind of just, oh, hey, what's this over here, and then stop playing, and then it just sucked me into a cutscene and was trying to move the main plot along, and I didn't want to do that. So that kind of stuff bothers me about the game. The fact that when it does tell you what to do, it takes over your life for a while. But ultimately, if it isn't doing that, then you're not really sure what you're supposed to do. And I don't know. It feels like a very confusing open world. I probably need to just kind of get on the horse and ride around. But the map's gigantic and it's easy to get lost and it's easy to kill your horse by accident. And so I don't want to, you know... Don't want to waste too much time either, although I know that that's really the appeal of this game. What's happening here is I'm talking about Red Dead, which I'm really enjoying, but I'm also sort of experiencing what my problem is with modern-day gaming. You're talking to a guy who grew up in the era of Super Mario 1, just a side-scroller that the next thing you encounter is the next thing you have to deal with. And that's not what open-world games are designed to be, and that feels both a little bit overwhelming and also a little bit somehow limiting to me, because, like, I'm the type of guy that, like, I want to know what the next thing is I'm supposed to be doing. And in an open world game, you almost have to stumble upon that rather than just be out and about and just having fun, you know? And I don't know. It's one of those things that it works for me and it doesn't work for me. Legend of Zelda did it really well. Breath of the Wild did it really well. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, for those of you who thought that might have been two different games, that did it really, really well. Mario Galaxy did it really well, although that's a little bit less open world. It's individualized stages, but you get to explore and do different stuff. That did it really well. Fallout does it pretty well, although it's a little bit hard to find some things, but it did it pretty well. Red Dead, I feel like doesn't do it very well, just because there's not really... There's, you, like I said, I feel like I'm just having to stumble into the missions, the, like, the real plot-driving missions, and anything else I do is sort of, I don't know, there's something wanting there. It seems like it's mainly lessons in how to ride a horse, but I haven't played it enough to really, I think I see the charm of it, but I haven't played it enough to really experience the charm of it. I've seen the charm, but not experienced the charm, is where I am. Another 2 weeks of playing this thing, I'm going to love it. I know that. I don't want to sound like I just blindly hate the game. I know I'm going to love this game. But it's taking me some time to get used to, and it may just be that I'm used to the Fallout controls or something, or the Fallout engine and that whole thing. But I'm enjoying the look of the game so much that even with the frustrations I have with it, I'm still having a lot of fun. And that's if a game that you find inherently frustrating still has enough to offer to keep you playing, that's a damn good game. So I'm having a lot of fun with Red Dead, and I'm having a lot of frustration with Red Dead, but my frustration with Red Dead is less with Red Dead than it is just with the construct of modern gaming. I need a side-scroller in my life every now and again, and those are hard to find these days. So unless you play something like... Shovel Knight or something like that, which I probably need to keep playing because I sort of stopped on that. Yeah, I don't know. I like Red Dead a lot. It looks beautiful. I am having fun with it. I'm a little frustrated with modern gaming. And by the way, why do you have to wait so long to play a game these days when you get it new for the first time? You got to download all this stuff. If you don't have an internet connection, you're just screwed. And there are people in the world who don't have internet connections or have really crappy internet connections, such as me. I have terrible internet. I want to buy a game and play it. I don't want to have to buy a game and then wait overnight to play it because it's downloading some sort of stupid thing that they didn't think out the process well enough to have it on the disc. That's very frustrating. That's not specific to Red Dead. That's specific to every damn game that I've bought in the past 2 years. All right, let's get away from that. I really like Red Dead. I know it sounds like I don't, but I really do. And it's really, really beautiful. It's exactly as beautiful as everyone's said that it is. And that experience alone is worth it, to see how good it looks, even if there are some frustrations to a guy like me who wishes he was playing Mario. You know? The other thing I've been playing is the WWE 2K19 game. That's a lot of fun. I played 2K18 too. I played that on the Switch, and I'm playing 2K19 on the PS4. And the one thing I don't like about 2K19 is the reversals function, like the thing where the computer's beating you up and you need to be able to press reversal to stop them from beating you up and be able to hit them. Otherwise, you're just watching yourself get beat up for 10 minutes. That is virtually broken in 2K19. That doesn't... Like, I... screaming at the screen was pressing nothing but reverse for like 10 minutes and just couldn't do a thing, just watching myself get beat up by whoever I was facing at the time, because reversal just flat out doesn't work in this game, and it's really frustrating. And I went online, and I'm not the only person having that problem, so that's not me being old, that's reversals are broken in WWE 2K19. I've gone on Twitter and asked WWE about it. I've asked the 2K19 people about it. I've asked about it. Absolutely nobody is providing any responses. So that's the quality of game that WWE and the 2K19 gaming people, whoever they are, I've forgotten. I think they're just called 2K Games. I don't know. That's the level of game that the quality of quality control that they're releasing these days. And that's very disappointing. And I don't know if that's just on the PS4, because I think it's also on the Xbox, and I'm sure that there will be a Switch port of it sooner or later. But, boy, that's frustrating. That I kind of hate it, and I don't want to feel that way. Basically, I need to go in and just brutally win every match as quickly as I can and not let the computer get in any offense, because if I do... I'm screwed. I'm just stuck getting beat up for 10 minutes, pressing nothing but reversal and not being able to reverse... So the game, again, looks fantastic. Like, I you could easily just be convinced that you're just watching a WWE program. But playing it, the fact that reversals are broken in WWE 2K19 makes the game almost unplayable, unless you put it on, like, super easy, and just don't allow for a good match, and just, like, grab a steel chair and start wailing on a guy immediately. That's the only way to solve it. And that's very frustrating. So if they ever fix that, it'll be a good playable game. Until then, it's just something that I'll play occasionally that will probably make me crazy, and I'll go back to playing 2K18 on the Switch, where it actually works. It doesn't look as good, but it works. That's it. That's it with the gaming, I think. I've talked about enough, and I'm getting frustrated talking about the perils of modern gaming. So I probably need to end this, because I want to talk about the stuff I like. And Fallout 4. We'll go back to Fallout 4. Fallout 4 was incredibly fulfilling, a lot of fun. Everything worked and worked right, and there was funny stuff, and there was serious stuff, and it was sort of a perfect, you know, perfect game in that way. Red Dead could get there if I can get past some of the control features. WWE 2K19, they really need to fix that reversal thing, because that is terrible. That's it for the gaming, and I think if I know myself in the future, then there's going to be some music here, and then we'll close out the show. So that's this week's show. I hope everybody had a good time. I've been kicking around over the recording of this, which show I'm going to do next. I think next is going to be a theme show. And I've got a couple of different themes that I'm semi-prepared to do. So if anyone has any strong thoughts on which one they would prefer to hear, please let me know. I'm thinking of either doing a show of my all-time favorite movies, because I don't talk about movies very much on here, and I've got some movies that mean a lot to me. Think about either doing my all-time favorite movies, of which there will be 10 or more, or I might do the theme show that has been percolating in my brain for a while, which is a theme show of the history of my fandom of Dream Theater, prog rock, prog metal band Dream Theater. Because Dream Theater put out a new album this year, and I want to review that, and I want to talk about it, and why not lead up to it with a history going back to 1991 is when I got into them. If you have a preference, let me know. If not, you'll get one of the two of those, and that's that, I guess. So that's it for this week. Hope everybody enjoyed themselves, or enjoyed me, or are enjoying something else while I'm in the background, or maybe I'm getting you through work. I don't know your life, but I hope that this added something to it. And if not, then, I don't know, listen to a TED Talk. I can't solve all your problems. I'm working on my own. But hey, I had fun doing this. Hope you did too. And as always, as I say on the show, always, these outros are getting worse. I'm so sorry. Look, check us out next time. Bye! It's probably gonna be Dream Theater.